On July 1st, 2021, over 130 countries agreed to a sweeping overhaul of the global tax system. This agreement on a 15% global minimum tax was unprecedented, taking on over a century of how international tax competition has been done. 1 year later, the deal appears stuck. Countries are moving ahead with caution before codifying this new tax into their laws. What does this delay mean for countries and multinational corporations? And what does the path ahead look like for global tax policy and competition? Hello, and welcome to The Deduction, a Tax Foundation podcast. My name is Jesse Solis, Communications Manager here at the Tax Foundation. And this week, we are joined by our Executive Vice President, a global tax policy expert, Daniel Bunn. Daniel, how are you?
Doing well, Jesse. Just got done with the 4th of July holiday and ready to go for a good conversation here.
I know you're a grill master. Did you get some grilling done this weekend too?
Absolutely. Did some spare ribs on Saturday. Didn't grill anything on the 4th itself, but definitely enjoyed being out there and getting some smoke going.
No reason to work harder on the day off, you know?
It's true.
So, Daniel, this is our third time having you on the podcast within this 12-month period to talk about this topic. And I think that's important because this is a topic that, one, confusing, but two, worth talking about over and over again. And that is the global minimum tax. So before we even get into the nitty-gritty, just remind us, what is the global minimum tax?
So the global minimum tax is based on an agreement by more than 130 countries. The agreement was reached last summer, so a year ago. And then was refined over the course of the second half of last year with some more details and some model rules. What it does is it seeks to set a floor on corporate tax rates, effective tax rates at 15%. Now, it uses some different approaches for calculating the effective tax rate, trying to harmonize rules across the globe. But it's a pretty big deal. It's just kind of slow moving at this point.
And what was the intent behind this deal? Is this something that just came about last year, or is this something that a lot of countries and global tax leaders have wanted for some time?
So for some time, there's been concern about corporate tax rates and what's been called a race to the bottom, that corporate tax rates have come down significantly and that jurisdictions that have high corporate tax rates are losing investment to lower tax jurisdictions. And the higher tax jurisdictions wanted a floor on corporate tax rates, kind of to stymie tax competition. And over the last several years, there's been a lot of movement towards, okay, well, what could this actually look like? And U.S. tax reform actually put out a first of its kind minimum tax on multinational companies. And other countries looked at it and were like, oh, well, maybe we can do this too. But let's try to harmonize everything. And that took a bit of time. And we're still in the process of figuring out whether these rules are actually going to be harmonized or not.
So countries lower their corporate tax rates to be competitive, to try to lure in new business or new customers. And the rest of the world's kind of saying, hey, instead of doing that, what if we all pay this flat rate in addition to the tax rates that are already in place, correct?
Yeah. So for jurisdictions that have rates below that effective rate of 15%, this is a top up. It says you have to pay at least this minimum kind of wherever you are in the world, as long as enough jurisdictions have adopted these rules. So there's this kind of critical mass that once you have the agreement, that doesn't mean that everybody's put the rules in place. But once enough countries adopt these rules, then it'll put a floor on effective tax rates throughout the world.
OK. And you mentioned this was agreed to a year ago. So we are, I don't know if you want to use the word celebrating, but we're marking its first birthday right now. What's it just look like 1 year after these 130 plus countries agreed to this thing?
So there has been some progress. The model rules outlining how these the global minimum tax could work were released in December. The European Union has put together legislation to implement those rules, but that legislation has not yet been passed. There are some countries, for a while it was Poland and now it's Hungary, that have been holding up progress on that EU legislation. But there are other jurisdictions like the UK looking to introduce legislation soon, and Canada and a couple other jurisdictions. But I think what's interesting to me is that it's not been kind of rapid fire. Let's everybody move along and implement this as fast as possible. In fact, I don't think this is going to be really implemented until the end of 2023, if not 2024. And there's part of the rules that get activated a year after the rest of the rules get activated. So it may be 2025 until we see everything kind of in place.
Does this pace surprise you at all? I know we mentioned earlier this is a big deal, but like how big of a deal is this that it's taking time for it to implement? Is that something that you foresaw, or do you think its proponents thought this would be moving quicker by now?
This is fundamentally a huge deal. It's a real challenge to get it from the starting line to the finish line, though, because the rules are really complex. I mean, there was a tax professor on a panel back in May who talked about how there are boundaries to human understanding, and these rules, the complexity of these rules, are pushing on those boundaries. I've been saying for a while that I think this is going to take longer to implement than people think. And so in my view, we're kind of right on track, kind of slowly figuring out what these rules are actually going to do, which jurisdictions are going to implement them, or if there are problems that need to be fixed.
Obviously, countries have elections. So do you think these timelines are going to keep getting messed up as countries elect or reelect new leaders? Or do you think it's got the guardrails in place to kind of keep moving how the authors of it wanted it to?
So yes and no. Elections are going to have impacts on whether certain jurisdictions implement the rules. But because the way the rules are designed, there's like a full belt and suspenders and top hat and jacket approach to these rules to make sure that if enough other jurisdictions adopt the rules, that the minimum tax is going to hit multinationals kind of wherever they operate. So if you get a couple of the largest, economies in the world, let's say you get the UK, Canada, Japan, maybe Australia, none of these jurisdictions are, kind of held back by, the process that's bogging down the EU or, potential US elections that would change whether Congress implements these rules. If you get enough of those jurisdictions adopting those rules, they will touch enough multinationals that even if those other jurisdictions don't adopt the rules, there will be a significant impact on complexity and additional tax pay.
With that, too, so as adoption takes place, we can talk politics all day, but let's talk about the economics of this thing, too. Have consumers or companies started to feel this thing already, or is it just moving so slowly that it hasn't kind of had the effect on pocketbooks or bottom lines that bar modeling or other modeling that they're showing that it's going to?
So it hasn't impacted the bottom line yet. It has impacted what I would call just general uncertainty. The complexity of these rules means that tax probably needs to be in the conversation even more than it was before, especially for a multinational that's engaging in, let's say, an overseas acquisition. You might have a U.S. company that wants to buy a factory or set up new operations abroad, and the minimum tax is probably going to have more of an impact on that than these cross-border tax rules currently would have had. So there's a lot of uncertainty there, and it's not really clear how the economics are going to work out once this is fully in place. But I think over the next 2-3 years, we're guaranteed more uncertainty as these rules roll out, even before the final economics are easy to measure.
All right, so Daniel, talk a little bit more about what the actual economics effects will be once the dust is settled. What's it going to look like then?
So once the dust is settled, if enough countries implement these rules, it's going to be a significant tax increase on multinationals, on the order of hundreds of billions of dollars. It's not really clear, who that revenue is going to go to because it depends on which countries adopt the rules. And it depends on, how much profits are in scope. Another element is the tax rate on cross-border investment. A recent report published by a UN institution really dug into the details on how this impacts cross-border investment. A lot of investment flows through low-tax jurisdictions. That's just the way it's been for many years. So if you implement a minimum tax, it's going to increase the taxes on a lot of cross-border investment flows. And these researchers estimate that effective tax rates on FDI should go up by 2 to 3 percentage points. But that connects to an increase in corporate income tax liability of 14 to 20%. So significant increase in corporate tax liability on cross-border investment. And those are things that, you know, start to worry me a little bit as far as what the overall impact is going to be, like, you know, how protectionist this deal is versus how supportive harmonization of rules are for, you know, kind of global trade and investment patterns.
And when you set up FDI there, foreign direct investment, which is pretty important to a country's economy, right?
Absolutely. We think about FDI and foreign direct investment all the time. One of my colleagues has a blog series going on this. Alex Durante has been looking at the importance of FDI for the U.S. companies and economic growth generally.
You can go back to even like your high school basic econ classes. Competition is something that's always kind of taught and just in the essence of supply and demand. It's something that helps economies. It's something that lowers prices. So for hundreds of years, we've, you know, been focused on competition. And you mentioned, too, that when countries do implement this or agree to this, that's when changes will start. But there's also countries that are not part of this, you know, like China, per se. So do you think this just kind of takes competition and removes it from, you know, a country's tax code, or at least from an international standpoint? Or do you think competition is still something that is going to be in the focus moving forward?
I think it's still going to be in the focus. This does change the way countries compete in a significant manner. So if prior to this deal, you were planning to reduce your corporate tax rate or introduce a special tax credit or a tax-free zone, as we see in some countries, or tax holidays, those are going to be less valuable. So the ways you're going to compete are going to change. Secretary Yellen talks about how the U.S. kind of has an advantage in this new setup because we can compete on our educated workforce and our infrastructure and things like that. Tax is still pretty important, though, and it's still going to be a value for countries to be able to say, okay, well, what does, you know, my tax incentive package look like? And for the U.S., there's a real question about how this might gut the research and development tax credit, and that's a credit that's been used by companies for a lot of innovative activities. So there's still questions on how this is upending competition, how this is changing the direction of competition, maybe towards non-tax areas. But even within the tax space, there's questions about credits and things that support innovation.
And we are back. So in this episode, we're introducing a new section to this podcast that we are calling Myths and Misconceptions. We're going to tackle some of the various talking points that are out there for these topics and really get into the core of what listeners need to know as we discuss these complex issues. So Daniel, one of the biggest myths that I've heard, and tell me if you agree with this or not, is that this thing is close to being finalized. What say you?
I would disagree with that. We have model rules out there. We have some introduced legislation and more legislation that's coming up. But it's like every day, I feel like, Jesse, that a new question about the meaning of these rules and how it impacts different parts of U.S. law or international tax law that comes up. And from my point of view, it looks like some of these questions need to be answered before we really know how these rules are going to work.
Even on our weekly staff calls, I feel like you always have a new update on the global minimum tax.
Right.
So what would you say is the next biggest misconception out there about this thing?
So I would say identical implementation is the next misconception. So the U.S. has a fundamentally different approach to the minimum tax in our current law. And what the Biden administration proposed and what Congress has been working on in the Build Back Better Act is also fundamentally different. So there's a huge difference between the U.S. proposals and what's in the model rules. But then also, as I look at different jurisdictions that are figuring out whether they're going to implement the rules or not, some of them are kind of picking and choosing. And like New Zealand isn't even sure if it wants to introduce all the rules. It's kind of waiting for that critical mass of countries to adopt the rules. And there's, you know, some other jurisdictions like United Arab Emirates is adopting a 9% general corporate tax rate for the first time. But that's not necessarily part and parcel of the model rules. So there's a lot of diversity.
So even though we had this uniform agreement on this thing, every country's taken a different approach on how to implement this quote unquote uniformity, just this 15% thing. There's a different approach going on everywhere.
Not necessarily everywhere, but there are enough differences out there that you could definitely say it's not going to be identical.
Yeah. And you had a recent report for Tax Foundation, taxfoundation.org on our website, kind of marking this one year celebratory thing. And you lay out some of those different approaches countries are taking and timelines they're taking too, right?
Yes, I do. I point out that, you know, some exploratory documents have come out of Canada, New Zealand, I mentioned. The UK is looking at legislation that'll be coming up. Ireland has a consultation document out there. Switzerland's going to have to change its constitution to be able to do this. There's all sorts of different countries that are looking at this in different ways, and many more we haven't heard from yet.
Yeah, I mean, 130 plus countries, that's going to take a while to just not even for you to compile, but just for announcements to be made. Everyone works on a different schedule. So let's get into some of our key takeaways here. It's fair to say this is big and maybe one of the biggest things to ever happen in tax policy.
Yeah, at the international level, I would say it's historic because you get so many countries that have agreed to this. And the changes themselves are so fundamental. However, you know, it's still yet to be seen how this all plays out. But even the fact that it is playing out to this point, this is pretty historic and a huge deal.
And do you think we'll be here 1 year later on the two-year birthday for the global tax deal and it's going to be a similar conversation? Or do you think there's going to be more progress made towards implementation by then?
I think there will be some more progress made. The challenge between now and then is going back to my questions about like, okay, well, how are we going to clarify some of these issues that keep popping up? If there is more clarification on those issues, then that's definitely progress. And if there are more countries adopting these rules, that's, you know, that's moving the ball forward as well. There's a huge question on whether the U.S. needs to do anything in the intervening years. I mentioned earlier, it might not be until 2025 that the rules are all in place. So there's a big question about what the U.S. should do.
Finally, as I mentioned at the start of this thing, this is our third time talking about it on this podcast. I'm sure it won't be the last time this year. I hope we've gotten the point across, but just to the average taxpayer out there, your average accountant, average, you know, average policymaker, why does this matter? Why are we devoting so much time to this?
This matters from my perspective because it's an increase in corporate taxes. It's that's really what it is. And, you know, at the core, it increases the frictions for cross-border investment and it increases complexity. Now, it could accomplish some level of harmonization that provides more tax certainty and things like that. But there's a long road between where we are now and where that kind of opportunity lies. You know, countries are trying to increase taxes on multinationals, and that's what it comes down to.
Daniel, informative as always. I'm sure this is going to be still the focus of most of your time in the coming months ahead. But what else can people expect from you at Tax Foundation?
So we've got our annual International Tax Competitiveness Index that's coming out this fall. I've been doing work compiling data and prepping that report. We always try to get that done sometime during the summer. We also have some interesting things connected to what the EU is working on as far as tax policy is concerned. So plenty to watch out for.
Yeah. And I think not to overpromise, but I think we want to do an episode on the EU soon and kind of give listeners a deeper look into what all is happening there in the tax space. Well, Daniel, thank you so much. We'll be sure to talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Jesse.
The Deduction is produced by Dan Carvajal. To learn more about the Tax Foundation and The Deduction, visit us online at taxfoundation.org/podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Tax Foundation, as well as on Twitter at Deduction Pod. Thank you, and we'll see you next time on The Deduction. Thank you.